Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Well, David Gergen gets it, but he only gets a little piece of it. Top of the Monday morning to you on the West Coast. Monday noon, I guess it is right now, on the East Coast and all places in between. Tom Hartman here with you. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Welcome to our program. Here's the big challenge that Barack Obama has, and this, they've known this from the get-go, and they've done a reasonably good job. But you've got the Swift Boat guys. You've got Karl Rove being an unofficial advisor to the McCain campaign. In other words, he'll get paid after McCain wins, or after he loses, as the case may be. But I really the signals that I'm hearing are that these guys actually expect McCain to win. And the way they expect him to win is the same way that they expected Bush to win over Kerry, which is not on the issues and not even on the qualifications of the candidate, but rather on character assassination and terrifying niche voters, specific niches of people. And there are two niches that can flip the election. Now, we progressives tend to think of ourselves as like, you know, we're the mainstream, we're the most, we're out there. But the fact of the matter is that true progressives, people who actually understand the issues, actually care about the issues, are really out there activists, you know, the people who are calling Pelosi's office, calling for impeachment, the people who are supporting folks like Russ Feingold and Dennis Kucinich and Peter DeFazio and Bernie Sanders. True progressives, ideological progressives, are a relatively small minority within the Democratic Party. The Progressive Caucus is growing. I think it's over 60 members now. It's growing in the House of Representatives. And Bernie from the Senate, I mean, you know, it's and Feingold and Boxer. But we're a relatively small minority. Nonetheless, we're a small minority that can have a big impact on the election. The same is true on the Republican side. Historically, the minority that's been driving the agenda has been the corporatist Republicans, the right-wing corporatist Republicans. But the minority on the Republican side that has been electing candidates has been a combination of the racist that Richard Nixon brought into the race with his Southern strategy after, you know, when Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act and said, okay, we're not, you know, the Democratic Party is no longer going to be the party of racism. And let's just be honest about it. Even though FDR and Harry Truman made a lot of very, very positive moves, they didn't take apart racism in the South in the United States. They didn't end apartheid in the United States. Although they made, you know, they made a lot of good steps, particularly with regard to the military, they didn't do it. And LBJ did. And there were a lot of disaffected racists in the South. And Richard Nixon said, okay, we're going to pick these folks up. This is our Southern strategy. We're going to appeal to the racists in code. And the fact of the matter is that since that point in time until today, no Democratic candidate for president has carried the majority of white men in the United States, period. That's a little footnote that is never mentioned when they say, you know, Barack Obama's not carrying the majority of white men, or Hillary Clinton wouldn't have carried the majority of white men. Neither did John Kerry, neither did Al Gore, neither did Jimmy Carter. I mean, it hasn't happened since, I believe, John Kennedy did, but it hasn't happened in a long time. So, number one, they said, we need to go after that racist vote. We've got to keep those racists alive. We've got to play the other card. But the other not to use the word other too much here, the other group that the right is reaching out to in this John McCain campaign, in their characterization of Obama, is the terrified Christians. And terrified is the important operative word here. The Christians who believe that these are the end days, they've read Hal Lindsey's book, The Late Great Planet Earth, they've read the Left Behind series. Keep in mind, the Left Behind series, that this series of novels has been read by more people on the planet than any other book in the last 100 years. Arguably, particularly if you calibrate for population growth, the last book that sold as many books as the Left Behind series was Uncle Tom's Cabin by Harriet Beecher Stowe in the 1850s. And before that in the 1830s, 1836, Democracy in America by Alexis de Tocqueville. Maybe Trilby in the 1890s, the story that included Svengali. But that's about it. I mean, we're talking 60, 70, 80 million copies of this book sold just in the United States of these books. And, of course, they're in print in all kinds of languages all over the place. And these books posit that a person is going to come forward and portray himself as the one. And he will be the Antichrist. He will be the one that the Christ figure will have to do battle with, and he will usher in the beast. You know, the whore and the beast, the whole story out of Revelation, and there will be war in the Middle East, and then out of this he will be defeated, and 1,000 years of peace will reign. And all of the good people will be up in heaven during the tribulation, and the tribulation will be this terrible 7-year period. Okay, that's the storyline. That the one is the one you have to worry about. And here is the McCain ad speaking to those people. Now everybody thinks... Actually, even before I play that, let me play it. This is David Gergen, and he's talking about the same ad, this Moses ad, this The One ad, and he thinks it's about race.
I think that Donna's got a point here. Everybody knows he's black, but there has been a very intentional effort to paint him as somebody outside the mainstream. Other. He's not one of us. He's below the radar screen. I think the McCain campaign has been scrupulous about not directly saying it, but it's the subtext of this campaign. Everybody knows it. And when they send, there are certain kind of signals. As a native of the South, I can tell you when you see the Charlton Heston ad, the one, that's code for he's uppity. He ought to stay in his place. You know, everybody gets that. Who's from a Southern background. We all understand that. When McCain comes out and starts talking about affirmative action, I'm against quotas. We get what that's about.
Yeah, absolutely. And they are appealing to the racist vote. But even more importantly, and this is the one that even the media doesn't get, is they're appealing to the terrified white Christians. And I'm telling you, there are more terrified white Christians out there than there are racists, actually. Or maybe the numbers are equal. I'm not sure. But here is the ad that everybody is talking about. This is the McCain ad.
It shall be known that in 2008 the world will be blessed. They will call him the One.
A nation healed. A world repaired. We are the ones we've been waiting for.
And they're showing, of course, pictures of Obama in front of thousands of people. The viral emails that are going around right now are saying, 200,000 people, the Bible predicted that 200,000 people will show up for the Antichrist. I'm sorry, it didn't. The Bible predicted that the Antichrist would be Muslim. I'm sorry, Islam wasn't even invented until 700 years after the Bible was written. But nonetheless, these are the viral emails. Hit back to McCain's ad.
And he has anointed himself, ready to carry the burden of the world.
Anointed. Anointed is what John the Baptist did to Jesus. Anointed is you are the Messiah.
To quote Barack, I have become a symbol of America returning to our best traditions. He can do no wrong.
And then they take a quote from Obama where he's making fun of all this stuff.
Do you have any doubts?
Never.
Can you see the light?
A light will shine down.
This is where he's making fun of him. This is totally taken out of context, where he had been making a joke out of him, saying, this is how the Republicans are going to portray me. A light will shine down, and you'll see it's me, and you got to vote for me.
From somewhere. It will light upon you. You will experience an epiphany. And you will say to yourself, I have to vote for Barack.
And the world shall receive his blessings.
This was the moment when the rise of the oceans
began to slow, and our planet began to heal.
And this, and you know, and there they've got, you know, of Obama and Moses. I mean, this is the absolute. This is the let's appeal to the terrified Christians. Let's characterize Barack Obama as the Antichrist. This is the new, I'm telling you, the Swift boats are at it again. The last time the Swift boat guys did it, they did it by buying a TV ad 4 years ago and getting, and paying a couple $100,000 for a TV ad and getting millions and millions and millions of dollars of media coverage as a result of it. Now in the age of the internet, now that everybody has email, now what's going on is instead, these things are going out through email. I mean, I just got this email over the weekend. According to the book of Revelation, the Antichrist, quote, the Antichrist will be a man in his 40s of Muslim descent who will deceive the nations with persuasive language and have a massive Christ-like appeal. The prophecy says the people will flock to him and he will promise false hope and world peace. And when he is in power, he will destroy everything, end quote. As if this is a biblical quote. It's not, as I pointed out. Islam didn't even come into existence until 700 years after the Bible was written. So, 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Speeding along. So, is Obama the Antichrist? I'm telling you, this is seriously being discussed on right-wing talk radio and on religious talk radio. Now, Limbaugh takes it a step farther. He just turns it. He meshes together the three: the Antichrist, the appeal to racism, and his traditional, if you're not a hard right conservative who loves corporations and hates the middle class, then you must hate America. Rush Limbaugh on this topic.
And this Obama thing is a pure, unadulterated sideshow. Obama is not a great thinker.
Yeah, that's why he was, you know, head of his class at Harvard, made head of the Harvard Law Review. He's, you know, it's... But George Bush is a great thinker. Well, anyway, as Rush says,
he's a believer. He has been indoctrinated at his schools.
Oh, at those schools he went to. Yes, those Muslim madrasas. See, again, these are all these subtle ways of getting. Of course, Barack Obama never went to a madrasa. He was educated in public schools. But, you know, that's not the story that you'll find in the emails coming from the right wingers.
And he's believed what he has been told there.
Yeah, and this is another way of saying this guy is the Antichrist. This is religious.
And among those beliefs is that the United States is fundamentally a force for provocation in the world, and that the United States is at root responsible for the way we are treated and seen by those who hate us.
What a novel idea, that people may dislike us because of the way we behave. Why else would it be, Rush? It must be because, I don't know.
This is what he believes. He's not a thinker. It's a form of self-loathing, ladies and gentlemen. Not of himself, of course, because he's the Messiah.
See, there you go. So, first of all, self-loathing. You know, this again, triggering the whole self-loathing blacks thing, you know, and all these god-awful stereotypes of Oreo cookies and whatnot. But then he goes into the Messiah, because he's the Messiah.
But in the aggregate, self-loathing of nation, the kind of self-loathing of America that the left here and in Europe embraces. And that's why they love Obama, because he loathes America. He blames America. America's responsible for all that's wrong in the world. If we just need somebody in touch who has compassion and sensitivity, the rest of the world will miraculously love us.
Yeah, miraculous.
There will be no more evil.
And there will be no more evil. I mean, the number of code words in that thing is absolutely astounding. This Hannity played the satirical gospel of Obama on his show.
And so it was, in the fullness of time, before the harvest month of the appointed year, the child ventured forth for the first time to bring the light unto all the world.
Thank you.
He traveled fleet of foot.
The child, of course, being Barack Obama. And this whole long, it's a 3.5 minute long thing. Throughout the whole thing, it's using biblical language to talk about Obama as if Obama thinks he's the Christ, and as if all of
us who really understand this stuff
realize that he's the Antichrist.
And the tribes of NATO immediately loosed the caveats that had previously bound them. And in the great battle that ensued...
Oh, the great battle. You know, you ever heard about the great battle? You ever heard about Revelation? You know about, you know, the great Satan? The great battle is going to come, the plain of Armageddon.
And the threat of terror was no more. From there, he went forth to Mesopotamia, where he was received...
Mesopotamia, you know, otherwise known as Iraq, yes, but let's use the biblical language.
...unto him, and blessed his 16-month troop withdrawal plan, even as the imperial warrior Petraeus tried to destroy it.
Yes, like Caesar, right?
A miracle occurred.
A miracle! A miracle! Get out! I mean, the code language in this is not even subtle. I'm telling you, all across America, there are Christians who learned this stuff. You know, I remember back in the early 70s, reading Hal Lindsey's Late Great Planet Earth, and there was a period of time in my life when I was attending evangelical Christian churches, and you know, just was into this stuff. And I'm telling you, that group of people, I know these people. This, you know, I grew up in Lansing, Michigan, or, you know, right in the heart of the Midwest, and you would be boggled by the number of people across, well, all across America, but particularly in the Midwest, who are attending fundamentalist churches and for whom this is meaningful.
At his feet, in Jerusalem and in surrounding Palestine, the child spake to the Hebrews and the Arabs, as the scripture had foretold. And in an instant,
the
lion lay down with the lamb.
Yeah, and I mean, this is all biblical, and this, you know, from Hannity's show. This is absolutely incredible. So the question is, how is it possible? Just sort of like the John Kerry question. I mean, the thing that the Swift boaters set up is, how is it possible for John Kerry to rebut the Swift boaters? If he challenges them head on, he gives credibility to their claim. How does Barack Obama say, no, I'm sorry, I'm not the Antichrist, without causing everybody to think, oh, Antichrist? How does he say, no, I'm not here to talk about race? Well, he made a joke the other day. He said, you know, well, yeah, I'm the guy who doesn't look like all those guys on the dollar bills. All of a sudden, McCain is out there going, oh, yeah, Obama, he's played the race card. They had been waiting for anything. So it's the racists and the terrified Christians, and they may well be enough to flip an election.
This is Tom Hartman. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Republicans have crafted a message which is being subtly and in many cases on Christian broadcasting and on some of the right-wing shows that tend to have a religious tilt is basically impossible to respond to. It's very, very, very difficult to respond to other than putting together. See, here's the problem is that everybody doesn't know Barack Obama. He has to be in a situation of identifying himself before they can identify him. I mean, that's the problem, is that the other side is defining him. And instead of using Swift boat ads, they're using email and they're using right-wing talk radio. But it's the exact same strategy. And frankly, it concerns me considerably. Paul in Louisiana. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind? Or is it Los Angeles? I'm not sure what L.A. on the call screen means. Paul?
Tom, you know, I would, if I were running Obama's campaign, I'd hit McCain with just as they did with Ford. You know, they had white women waving to Ford as they call us again.
Yeah, this was Harold Ford Jr. in Tennessee. But see, that was such an explicit, overt call to racism. It would work in Tennessee, and it did work in Tennessee. Harold Ford Jr. went from being ahead to being behind, and his opponent was the only Republican who was elected in that cycle in 2006.
That's right.
But I don't think that would work nationwide. This, it has to be much more subtle, which is what they're doing now.
I would run pictures of McCain denouncing the U.S. as a prisoner when he was a prisoner of war, the fact that he cheated on his first wife.
See, I think all that stuff is going to blow back. It's all going to be seen as personal smears. There's a difference between a personal smear and appealing to somebody's religious beliefs.
Well, that's true, too. But what about his record for voting for veterans, his general record as a senator, his voting record?
All those are things I think are going to come out, Paul. All of those are going to be things that come out. But the problem is that we're talking issues here. Those are talking issues. And this is how the Democrats have lost 8 elections. You know, and I'll give you that John Kerry didn't lose. It was stolen in Ohio. And George Bush didn't lose. It was given to him by the Supreme Court. But nonetheless, that's how it got close enough that they could steal them, yeah. Is because the Democrats were talking about issues and the Republicans were saying, do you want to have a beer with this guy? You can trust this guy. You can't trust the other guy. He's an elitist. He's too smart. He only wants to talk about the issues. I'm sorry. It's a problem. Sean in Meridian, Mississippi. Hey, Sean. Sean,
hey,
you're
Tom.
On the air. Yeah.
Tom, how are you?
Just great. What's up?
Listen, I think we need to get over this who mentality and get back on the issues of what.
Well, I agree, but that's not what the McCain campaign is going to do. They're going to keep it on the who, because most Americans don't know who Barack Obama is.
No, I'm not talking about the what. The what is Congress, not the presidency. You know, even
Congress doesn't appoint the Supreme Court, Sean, and the Supreme Court will...
Wait a minute, Tom, hear me out. If he appoints a Supreme Court justice, he has to be approved by Congress. We need to get the Congress.
Well, I'll give you that, Sean, and I don't disagree that we have to get a Congress, and we have to get a Congress that has some leadership. You know, keep in mind it was under Harry Reid's leadership that we got Alito and Roberts on the Supreme Court. I mean, did you know Justice Scalia's father was the head of the New York area was the head of the Nazi the Bund, the Italian Nazi party group? I mean, you know, overtly. I mean, it's just, and this stuff just, like, it never comes out. If he had been a Democrat, it would have come out. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible. Jeff in Detroit, listening to WDTW. Hey, Jeff.
Yeah, okay. I think it's easy to respond to this, to these.
Tell me how.
Liberals supposedly hate America, right? And it's easy. I mean, liberals may hate America, but I mean, which I don't agree with, but I mean, clearly conservatives hate Americans. You know, we're all a bunch of nation of whiners. Do you want to have a beer with Phil Graham who thinks you're a whiner? You know, you're going to be talking to you at the bar talking about your problems getting laid off, and he's going to be just calling you a whiner. I mean, there's your ad right there. You say, who hates America? And you show Phil Graham, we're a nation of whiners. That's the way to do it. I don't understand why hating Americans is not unpatriotic, which is what, you know, conservatives really do. They hate Americans. We're ungrateful.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and certainly their action. I would say it's not a matter of hate. I would say just conservatives by and large.
Wow.
At the higher end, the average Joe Sixpack who thinks he's a conservative,
right.
He doesn't get it. I mean, he's just buying the talking points. He doesn't realize that he's supporting a corporatocracy that is ripping him off, destroying his paycheck, and trying to destroy the middle class.
Can I just say one thing about this oil sharing, the oil drilling, you know, flip flop from Obama.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know if I agree with it, but I mean, he really has outplayed John McCain in this political poker hand here badly, because now John McCain has, his winning issue has been the fact that, of real issues, has been, you know, in the past, in his past life, he used to be someone who would work across both sides of the aisle and compromise. Now he's, according to Joel Lieberman yesterday on Meet the Press, he's inflexible. He's not even willing to take Obama's compromise or the Gang of Ten's compromise.
Okay.
And that puts him to the far right and Obama to this situation where he's willing to compromise.
Yeah.
And Barack Obama should be demanding, he should be, if he's going to agree to this, he should be demanding the same deal that the Iraqis get with the greatest example of, shining example of democracy around the world, the Iraqi oil revenue sharing program, which is Soviet-style communism at its purest, mind you, which Republicans support, that, as long as it's not
I, you know, Jeff, I don't think it has anything to do with Soviet-style communism. You know, keep in mind, it was Mossadegh who nationalized the oil industry in Iran, democratically elected, a man who loved and revered democracy, who was overthrown by the CIA simply because he nationalized the oil industry in Iran. I have a feeling al-Maliki knows this history of what happened. But that, but nonetheless, with regard to the, you know, I don't think that Barack Obama should have flip-flopped on FISA. I think that that was a terrible tragedy. And I do think that he should be taking off the table the drilling. I think what he should be saying is, you want to drill offshore? It's up to the governors of the states. It's up to the people of the states. That's what the Ninth Amendment says. This isn't the federal government's business or problem. Leave it up to the states, with the exception of Anwar. But I would also attach to it the exact same provision. I'd say the oil companies have to do exactly what the coal companies do, which is when they buy a lease, they have to use it within a certain period of time. I think it's a year, 18 months, maybe it's 2 years. If they don't use that lease, they no longer have that lease. Because this whole Anwar, this whole drilling offshore thing, it's got nothing to do with getting oil now. What it's all about is building the portfolio of the oil companies. But we digress. Dan in Boston. Hey, Dan, what's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good.
You know, I think these ads appeal to such a small minority. Like you said, conservative listeners, Christian radio listeners, and these politicians.
But see, it's a small minority, but it's a large enough minority to flip an election. If you take all the liberal books that have been published in the last 5 years and add them all up, David Sirota's book, David Corn's books, Paul Krugman's books, my books, everybody else's books, they don't come to even 50% of the sales of just one Left Behind series book. And that is the theme that these ads are all around. These ads are for people who have read the Left Behind books, 68 million of them in print.
Barack Obama should respond to these things by saying, these people aren't Christians. These people are, anything of value gets counterfeited. These people are counterfeiting themselves as Christians. They're
I don't disagree that it's true, but the problem is, as soon as you attack somebody's religion or you attack somebody for their religion, you're going to go down. You're just going to go down. It's going to be a disaster. Rick in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Rick.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Hey, I think one thing one can do is get the word out on Zeitgeist.com.
Yeah, Zeitgeist is a great movie. The problem is was that Aaron Russo's? No, Zeitgeist. Yeah, okay, I know what you're talking about. The problem with Zeitgeist is about half of the movie is you know, arguable, debatable kind of fringe stuff, and the other half of the movie is pretty solid stuff. I mean, it is
a third of it, right?
Yeah, and you know,
the power
there's
of nightmares.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you want, instead of watching Zeitgeist, and I don't discourage people from watching Zeitgeist. It's just that, you know, the opening stuff about the history of Christianity, yeah, that's all solid. But then it wanders into some areas that are pretty debatable. If you want to see good information about these topics, go to Google and Google Adam Curtis, in quotes, Adam Curtis. Adam Curtis did a series, he's done a series now of three documentaries for the BBC, for Channel 4 and the BBC. One's called The Trap, the other, my two favorites, The Trap and The Power of Nightmares, and you'll get what's going on. I mean, you'll absolutely get what's going on. The question is how to defend against it. Howard in Pittsburgh, WPTT.
I feel that there's a saying called the best offense is a good defense, or vice versa.
No, it's the other way around. The best defense is a good offense.
Yeah. So I am saying to you that the Democrats, they have to go on the offense. McCain's got Karl Rove back there. We know you have to tip your cap to the tip your cap to the guy. He's got a lot of talent. But we have to have some talented people on the Democrat side. And one of the things that we got going for us is family values. And, you know, shipping jobs to China, that's not a family value.
You're absolutely right, Howard. And we need to be pounding on that stuff, and we need to be pounding on it hard and saying, you know, the Democratic Party is the party of family values. It's the party of supporting families. And then leave the fringe stuff to the fringe. 45 minutes. Please.
The Tom Hartman Program. Visit us on the web at HartmanRadio.com.
Before the hour. By the way, whoever has this is a real question for me, and I've been in the middle of a lot of these things, and it's like, how do you respond to a religious pitch? We're talking about people at the level of belief, and I think the Republicans have come up with a box here that is going to be damn hard for Barack Obama to get out of, and I don't have an easy answer. And I know most of the time I come on this show and I say, here's my idea, here's my solution. And other than calling this thing out and making it very, very public, you know, let me tell you, I've figured out what's going on with this thing. Other than that, I don't have an easy answer for this thing. And so, you know, what we're going to do is if you have a suggestion for this, you go over to TomHartman.com. You can post a message on today's show blog, right on our homepage, you know, our today's show thing. And we, at the end of the show, we're going to give away a copy of We the People, which is one of my favorite books that I've written. It's a 128-page illustrated book of the history of the United States. In fact, it's one of the densest, information. It's just great about the history of the United States and the history of the Reichstag fire in Germany and the parallels between that and the Bush administration. We'll give a copy of that away to whoever posts a suggestion that somebody can actually use. Donna in Gig Harbor, Washington. Hey, Donna, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Thanks
Hi,
for
Donna.
Taking my call.
Sure.
I love your show.
Thank you.
You know, I think that it's, from my perspective, it's a game that I wouldn't even want to engage in or play.
But it's already being played.
There's no winning a conversation like that. But I think that there's also no... From my perspective, no denying that this is the ultimate twist that is happening right now. It's that conflict between, love and fear.
Yeah.
And to elevate the conversation, any time that this comes up to a conversation of love, I think is definitely the way to go. And to get those brilliant advertisers and wordsmiths, wordsmithing a campaign based on quantum physics and love and elevate the whole conversation. It's
yeah, well, that's
power.
What the, that's
Let
what
me
the
just open... finish this. Let me finish this
sure.
thought, because this is personal power over corporate power. And anytime we can say we're choosing personal power, we're empowering ourselves and we choose.
That's exactly what they're using against us, Donna.
Pardon me?
That's exactly what they're using against us. In that ad, over and over again, they quoted Barack Obama saying, this is about you. This is about us. Our time is here. And they're saying these are the kind of things the false Messiah would say. Because and that's the whole Christian theology. The fearful end of Christianity is saying that the Antichrist is going to come and he's going to use the words of Christ. He's going to use the words of peace and love and faith and charity. He's going to use those words, but he's going to have a hidden agenda. So Barack Obama is damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. There is no way out of that box, in my humble opinion. Thank you for the call, though. Kenny in Baltimore. Hey, Kenny.
Hey, Tom, I'm looking at this whole thing, and frankly, I blame the left for this and the left power structure and this weak ability for the left.
What power structure on the left?
the little bit of a power structure that I see came out when the FISA bill go down, I see how the left just pounced on Barack on this whole thing with the compromise. I mean, nobody even talk about what you got out of the deal. Everybody want to talk about what the phone companies got. But put that aside. Look at this whole thing with John McCain on the race issue, where he said Barack played the race card. But I don't see nobody on the left really going out there and pushing back on the issue that John McCain ran a ad back in June using Barack Obama's face on a $100 bill.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
you're right. That was actually where it started. And now they're criticizing Barack Obama for that. No, yeah, point on, Kenny. And there has been so many things that have not been pushed back against. That's the problem. Bill in Detroit, listening, and thanks for the call. Bill in Detroit on WDTW.
Tom, I call with a heavy heart today. I remember they used the same evil fear against JFK's Catholicism.
You're absolutely right.
And
it's
JFK,
just that they used it rarely, infrequently, and not in national ads.
Well, there's no control on the media, and there's no regulation, but JFK immediately went to Houston and addressed an assembly of hundreds of Christian ministers, and he didn't give a speech. He took their questions, he spoke extemporaneously, and he used his intellect and his intelligence to win them over.
Right.
And this heartless evil and this soulless greed of whatever party is if you want to call them Republicans, I think it goes way beyond that. But they couldn't bribe JFK, so they allowed him to be murdered. Martin Luther King, they could not bribe because he had character, and they allowed him to be murdered. Bobby was for the poor and the disenfranchised, and they allowed him to be murdered. And this country has been in a coup d'etat since 1963, and now we are faced with the same evil, and they will go to any lengths. And I have great heartbreak and great fear. And I think the only way a Barack...
You know, this goes back to Smedley Butler, Bill.
I'm sorry?
This goes back to Smedley Butler, the guy who was hired by Prescott Bush and his buddies to overthrow Franklin Roosevelt.
Oh, God. I think if Barack addresses people the way JF did and takes their questions... And if Barack also invites these people to join him or abandon this evil, this soulless greed, whatever party you want to be, become an American and abandon this waste of our resources, this waste of our treasure, our failure to embrace the poor and the infirm, and he can invite them to join us.
You know, from your lips to God's ears. Let's hope it happens. This, by the way, is what JFK had to say on this.
I am not the Catholic candidate for president. I am the Democratic Party's candidate for president, who happens also to be a Catholic. I do not speak for my church on public matters, and the church does not speak for me.
But how do you say, I am not the Antichrist? 57 minutes past the hour. Should communities have a say over their quality of life? We're talking about the South L.A., South Central L.A. saying no more to fast food restaurants. Aaron Brook and I are going to discuss that in the next hour. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Is Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. South Los Angeles, Tom Hartman here with the South Los Angeles, South LA. The community itself, the elected representatives of the community, are looking at the fact that this is an area that has a very limited amount of land for sale. Pretty much all the land is gone. Much of the commercial land is owned by fast food joints. There's a major problem of malnutrition in the area. The fast food joints are not providing the kind of food that would solve a problem of malnutrition. And they're suggesting that let's have a moratorium on fast food joints in the area. Let's use zoning. A, have a moratorium on more fast food joints. B, let's do whatever we can to encourage what they refer to as grocery store slash restaurant. In other words, sort of a grocery store with a lunch counter. Or like here in Portland, we've got this great chain of restaurants, New Seasons, which have all kinds of fresh fruit and fresh vegetables and all kinds of stuff, plus a deli, plus a place where you can sit and eat if you want to, you know, buy something from the deli or you want something made. Let's come up with healthy alternatives for the community. And the pushback, of course, is what? You're going to try and tell me how I should eat? Yaron Brook is with us. He's the executive director of the Ayn Rand Institute. Ayn Rand, of course, the thinker, the Russian refugee. Her father lost his pharmacy in the Bolshevik Revolution, came to the United States, and Ayn Rand did, and founded the Objectivist Movement, wrote Fountainhead, wrote Atlas Shrugged, and, in fact, Alan Greenspan showed up at her funeral with a six-foot-tall dollar bill-shaped floral bouquet. He was a member of her organization, still is, I would submit to you. The thinkers behind the thinkers behind the thinkers who have brought us the libertarians and the modern conservative movement, although these are the real thinkers. Yaron, welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot, but don't load Alan Greenspan on top of me, on top of my back. I don't need him.
Okay, but he's still quite proud of his association with Ayn Rand. You know?
Yeah, we're just not proud of it.
I see. Okay. Well, I'm pleased to hear that. I'm actually pleased to hear that. Our question for the hour you're on is, should communities have a say over the quality of life in their own communities, or should corporations who own the land in the communities be the ones who own, are the only ones who have a say in the quality of life in those communities?
I just don't think they've gone far enough. I think Big Brother needs to install cameras in these people's homes and make sure they eat their veggies every day. I mean, this is absurd. This is taking government paternalism to a new level. Trying to dictate to people what they should and shouldn't eat, who should and shouldn't open up restaurants. People are mature enough to be able to make choices by themselves, and the community should butt out of these kind of decisions. Of course, this is the L.A. City Council. This is not the local community. These are wealthy West.
But the
LA
person on the L.A.
Council
City Council
members
who brought this forward is representing South L.A.
Sure, and hopefully they'll vote her out of office for this. But it's absurd. I mean, if
no, she's representing her community. I don't think she's going to get voted out of office.
Maybe not. The community doesn't like this idea. I mean, all the interviews I've seen, most of the people, you know, like their fast food. It's cheap. It's quick.
Well, actually, a study by Richard Ellis, a local consulting group, concluded that most residents in South Los Angeles go outside the city in order to be able to access more retail and environment and entertainment options. The study estimated the annual leakage of business out of South L.A. to be more than $400 million a year, an amount that would support 1.5 million square feet of new retail in the Council District 9 project area alone. In other words,
well, then that provides a great capitalist incentive for people to come into the community and you know, build stores. You don't.
But
need
the problem is that the land is locked up by companies like McDonald's and Burger King. I remember
even if that were true, this doesn't solve that, right? Because all this is saying is that you can't do new development in these places. But the new development, you know, the new development would happen anyway. Who's going to come
in? No, it says
in?
You can't do new development that is more fast food restaurants. You
That's
can do
right.
new development that is high quality food restaurants. I remember when my son was in high school, and his high school class went. They did a project. He came home so radicalized this day. It was fascinating. The school that he went to was in downtown Atlanta, in urban Atlanta, in a largely African American area of Atlanta, and a relatively let's say not affluent. It wasn't the projects, but it wasn't an affluent part of Atlanta. And they all the kids got on a bus and they went into the center of one of the worst neighborhoods of Atlanta, and they found the only store that sold food in that area. And they had come up with a shopping list before they went of, you know, what would be a week's worth of groceries for an average family, just based on what all these kids would do if they could, you know, control their menus. And they priced everything at this store. And then they got in the bus and they came out to the white suburbs and they went to one of the big supermarkets and they priced everything. And it was like 40-50% more expensive in the inner city, A, and B, most of the fresh options weren't even available. Now, you can't tell me that that's because that's what the community wants.
Sure,
that's,
that, sure it is. That's what the community wants. If the community wanted fresh vegetables, then there would be a demand for it, and the grocery store would be able to make a nice profit off of selling them fresh vegetables. I would bet you anything that if you place fresh vegetables in there, they just don't sell. So what appears on the grocery shelves in every grocery store in America is what people will
so
buy.
So if this
otherwise,
is the case, then, let's assume for a moment that you're absolutely right. Let's just assume for a moment that you're absolutely right. Then the question is why. And I would submit to you that the why is because the toxic food industry is spending millions, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars promoting the idea that their food is the food. And there's nobody out there advocating for fresh fruits and vegetables.
Well, that's fine because the profit margins, we're not willing to pay profit margins on fresh fruit and vegetables.
Right, so profits are more important
McDonald's
than the survival of people.
So
you've got people who are...
I would argue is this is a consequence of the market. The market is the great place in which we all take our dollars and make decisions. In that sense, you love democracy.
But
it's
this is a market that is controlled by huge corporations who don't give a damn if people have diabetes. In fact, they like it because then they can also sell them pharmaceuticals.
There's nothing wrong with huge corporations. I think pharmaceuticals are heroic companies in our society. I think these grocery stores, these huge corporations, including McDonald's, by the way, are heroic companies. They provide a service that we want at amazing prices. And I find it interesting. We talk about malnutrition. You talked about malnutrition. And it's interesting. We're not talking here about malnutrition where people are dying of starvation. We're talking about the poor in America. The poor in America who are so don't get enough food that they're obese.
No. Malnutrition and not getting enough food are two completely different things. This is malnutrition. Obesity is malnutrition in most cases.
But you have to be clear on that.
Mal means bad. It's bad nutrition.
We're talking about people starving in Africa, and here we're talking about people who can eat, who can afford to eat, to the point where they become
obese. You're on all over the world. You find places where there are not food shortages, but there is poverty, and you'll find obesity because malnutrition,
sure.
Bad nutrition, mal. You know the Latin word for bad. Bad nutrition produces a body that doesn't work properly, and obesity is one symptom of that for many people. But this brings us back to this question: should communities? Should elected officials, should people through their elected representatives, should they have a say in planning how their community is going to be, or should it entirely be up to the people who own the big corporations?
It should be entirely up to the people who own the land in these communities to make choices about who they want to sell that land to, what the developers want to build on that land, and that should be up to
the community. So you're opposed to all kinds of zoning?
I'm opposed to all zoning, absolutely.
So if somebody wants to move to build a toxic waste dump in South L.A., no problem. If somebody, whatever it may be.
No, you can't build a toxic waste dump, but if somebody wants to take his home and turn it into a nice restaurant or turn it into a place of business, they should have every right to do so. And I think that that's where you get the options. That's where you get more land freed up is if you undo the kind of zoning.
How does a local vegetable seller compete with a $100 million a year ad budget from the big fast food restaurants?
Well, because if people really want vegetables, if vegetables, I mean, there's a huge ad campaign on this show and all over the country by the government about the value of eating vegetables. Hundreds of millions are spent on the value.
I would submit
vegetables.
To you that in a year it spends less money than the big food companies spend in a day.
Whatever it is, it's not zero. If people want vegetables, then they'll go to the one vegetable seller, and he'll make money off of that. And if people really want lots of vegetables, because I don't believe people are determined by advertising, if people want lots of vegetables, then they'll be
if
a lot
If people don't
profit,
make decisions based on advertising, why do corporations spend hundreds of billions of dollars a year on it?
McDonald's sells salads. Why don't people walk into McDonald's and buy a salad? And McDonald's has spent hundreds of millions of dollars advertising the fact that it sells salads.
Well, and in fact, but, you know, there's salad
people
dressings.
People don't want salads.
Yeah, okay.
People prefer Big Macs.
Yeah, all righty. You're on, Brooke. IanRand.org, the website. You're on. Always great talking with you.
It's
Thank
fun.
You. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is Tom Hartman.
I'm the lesson of my life.
Looks like I gotta be hot and cold.
See, here's the thing. People don't always, people, you know, as individuals, we're not always thinking about the big picture. We're not always thinking about what's the best thing for us in our lives. We're not always thinking, you know, in our bodies, in our physical health, or even in our lives. You could make the argument, and I know that there are some libertarians who will, that communities should not be running police or fire departments. If people want to defend themselves, let them get a gun and a bucket of water. And in fact, in the United States, back before Ben Franklin got it started in Philadelphia, most fire departments were private. You would pay for a fire department. And if you didn't have their medallion on your front door and your house was on fire, they'd drive up, take a look, no medallion, you haven't paid us, they'd drive off and let your house burn down. And at a certain point, we all got together and we said, you know, it would be better for America, even though we're going to have to pay for it, if we had fire departments, public fire departments, socialist fire departments. At a certain point, we said, you know, it would be good for us. We've all seen the Westerns, you know, where the town out west finally decides to, we got to hire a sheriff. What they don't say is, we got to raise taxes to hire a sheriff. Everybody kicks in. So should local communities, particularly communities that have historically been exploited because, I mean, just in the last 40 years, in some of these, particularly in some of the African-American communities, just in the last 40, 50 years, have people even had the right to vote? Have they, you know, functionally? Have they, just in the last 40 years, have they had the right to walk into a store that might sell good food? In these communities, really, even all across the United States, shouldn't we collectively sit down and say, you know, these big corporations want to make a lot of money off us. They want to exploit us. They, you know, if I guarantee you, if you go to theyrule.net, you will find fewer than 6 degrees of separation between any of the big fast food companies and any of the big pharma companies. And, gee, if we cause an epidemic of obesity, which then causes an epidemic of type 2 diabetes, which then makes a lot of profit for our new genetically modified insulin, what's wrong with that? We're making money no matter what. Well, what's wrong with that is that we, the people, collectively, we're paying for it, particularly when we're talking about people who don't have the money to have their own health insurance program, to buy health insurance. So it's being paid for with Medicare and Medicaid. And we are paying for it, so shouldn't we have some say in the matter? I mean, that, I suppose you could argue that that's the ultimate Big Brother statement. But the real issue here is who gets to make the decisions about what the nature of a community is going to be and the nature of business in a community. This is a microcosm of the macrocosm. Teddy Roosevelt talked about how big corporations in America could be toxic and destructive. Thomas Jefferson talked about how big corporations, big extreme wealth could be toxic, could be, what was the word he used, could threaten democracy. He said we must not allow wealth to aggregate to the point where it will threaten democracy. And that's what's happened. And I think it's entirely appropriate to say to a community, to say to the businesses in a community, sorry, you can't bring any more trash into our community. You can't bring any more junk food into our community. You can have a certain threshold of it, a certain amount of it. We're not trying to lock people out from choices, but let's expand their choices. Marcia in Atlanta, Georgia, you have some thoughts on this, Marcia. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Hi, Tom. My concern is that even if we have good food available, you walk into any fast food restaurant pretty much anywhere in the country, and people can't afford the healthy food. The cheap fattening food is 99 cents, and the healthy, you know, not fattening food is $4 and something. You go in with four children, what are you going
to
do?
Which brings us back to the issue of the disappearing middle class and the fact that people used to eat well 10, 20, 30 years ago because they had enough money to eat well because they had a good union job.
Exactly, and I'm part of the disappearing middle class. My health insurance now is more than my mortgage.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Marcia.
You're not as sorry as I am.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You know, but I think we have a more imminent or more I don't know, a faster thing to fix than who buys the land. Is take the people who've already got the land and have those corporations make healthy food affordable.
Yeah.
It's there.
Well, it's really, as you point out, there really are two pieces to this issue. One is that many people are eating unhealthy food because it's all they can afford. And it's all they can afford because of 30 years of Reaganomics. We have gone from 25% of the workforce being unionized, with 50% of Americans having the equivalent of a good union job, down to 7% of the private workforce in the United States being unionized, maybe 15 or 20% of Americans having the equivalent of a good union job. And even that is not safe and secure. And already now Walmart is organizing these meetings where they're bringing their senior management in, or bringing employees in, including hourly employees, and saying, in essence, they don't use the words Democrat or Republican, but they say, if you vote in favor of, you know, essentially this guy Barack Obama, who supports the Employee Free Choice Act, if you vote for these guys, if you get the Democrats in office, then your job is at risk, which is absolute nonsense. Costco is doing very, very well, thank you very much, for the unionized and well-paid force, you know, employee labor force. But Marcia, thank you for the comments. We have to increase pay to the point where people can actually afford to eat and provide them with more options. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Welcome back to the Real People's Radio. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 34 minutes past the hour. Well, let's see, what do you do when you buy all the radio stations and all the television networks and all the radio networks in the entire country? And then you buy most of the newspapers. You own 90% of the media, that at least in terms of exposure to people. You buy most of the magazines. Even though you started out as a small-time crook. Well, what do? You run for prime minister. That's what Silvio Berlusconi did, and has won 3 times. Now he is trying to stop, now that he's prime minister again, through sovereign immunity, he's trying to stop the prosecutions against him that started during the few years he was out of office for all the crimes that he did before he got into office before. But in any case, the latest story, our latest Berlusconi alert, the famous painting by Giambattista Tiepolo, 18th century painting from the 1700s, that shows a bare breast. They have painted over the breast. Yes, John Ashcroft is alive and well. 35 minutes past the hour, alive and well in Italy, apparently. It's pretty amazing. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Jeremy in Southern California. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Tom. You know, on the surface, it sounds kind of ridiculous to let anyone dictate what a community can have, you know, in its own community, but...
Well, I'm talking about the community itself dictating it.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, you know, they should get a vote on the issue. And all these Ayn Rand folks talk about how, you know, this is all about free markets. Well, it's about democracy or not. That's essentially it. They hate democracy. They always have. And, you know, all these free trade agreements are about exactly that. They don't...
Well, I wouldn't use the word hate, but I will tell you that Yaron Brook would not be offended by my saying that he has said on the air a number of times that he thinks that he doesn't believe in democracy. He believes in a free market. He thinks that the free market is superior to democracy. And my assertion is that there is no such thing as a free market. You always have to set rules for markets. And B, that capitalism will destroy democracy if it's unregulated.
That's exactly right. But what's appalling is the lengths and depths to which all these Reaganite people have gone to perpetuate their philosophy.
Yeah.
And what's really appalling to me is how many Christians perpetuate that. Because what it really says, Ayn Rand was an atheist, and her basically she said that self-interest is the highest law. You know?
Right. Yeah, that all altruism is selfish. Yeah.
It's completely contrary to everything Christ taught. Well, what's really appalling is what we're doing around the world to perpetuate that philosophy is we're saying that communities don't have the right to decide whether or not, you know, some company can pollute their rivers or, you know, whatever. I mean, they want to possess everything.
Yeah, look at Nigeria and the oil situation and how they had to kill Ken Sarahewo. I'm forgetting his last name, but, you know, they had to murder this. I mean, you know, on and on it goes. Spot on, Jeremy. And down in I believe it was Ecuador? Or perhaps it was Paraguay. One of the countries there where Bechtel came in and said, we own the water rights. And so if you take water off your roof, you have to pay us. Rainwater, you have to pay us. Noodles in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Noodles.
Hey, what's up? I was going to share with you about Sedona, Arizona, here in Arizona. Sedona is a town, a lot of rich people there, kind of a touristy type thing. They have a lot of the vortex things there, and it's a very beautiful place, but they already restrict there how many fast food places can go in there, where they can be. Not only that, if you do manage to get a Subway or a gas station or something in there, you can't just have a big, ugly Chevron or Circle K sign. Mm-hmm. You have to have it like it looks like it's built out of stone, and the logo has to be in turquoise colored.
So apparently zoning and community control over the look and the feel and the quality of life in a community is just fine for rich Republicans. It's just not fine for poor minorities. Excellent point. Thank you very much for calling and making it. David in Los Angeles. Hey, David.
Hi. I think you had a hard sell with this one because they're trying to act locally when really we should be acting nationally. We need to restrict the harmful ingredients and like the corn syrup.
Yeah.
And
we're slowly moving in that direction. I mean, a lot of communities now, I believe, is it San Francisco has banned trans fats?
I said nationally.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's the federal government's purview.
Yeah, well,
it's a public health issue.
Yeah, I agree. And if we have a national health care system, then it becomes a public health expense. And even without that, it's a public health. It is an expense that we're all bearing.
I hate to point out that they have a very adequate supply of fast food places. So restricting the new ones will only benefit the existing ones. I'd like to make one more comment on another issue, Obama's campaign.
Yeah.
If I were Obama, I could easily set aside this Messiah thing. Of course, I'm a staunch atheist. I'd simply call them all crazy.
Call them all crazy for saying that he's the Antichrist. But see, that's the thing. They're talking in code to people who will understand them.
Well, I wouldn't talk in code. I don't talk in code.
Well, that's the best suggestion that I can come up with, David, is to do exactly what you're suggesting, which is to call them out on it, which is why I spent the entire first hour of this program, you know, up until 40 minutes ago, talking about how the right, and it's not just the McCain campaign, but the McCain campaign in particular, you certainly see it there, are using coded language to describe Barack Obama as the Antichrist or the precursor to the Antichrist to get the religious right flipped out, and to get the religious right, who have been very lukewarm about John McCain, gung-ho behind him, because look at the alternative. It's not just a Democrat, and it's not just an African-American Democrat. It's the Antichrist. I mean, you know, if you're gonna get the churches out in huge numbers, the Antichrist is for sure gonna do it. I'm telling you, that it is absolutely gonna be the case. Kathy in Burbank. Hey, Kathy.
Oh, hi, Tom. I'm calling concerning the restaurants and zoning. And I think that the speaker that you had on was so 200 years ago, going back to the days of the Old South and the plantation owner, and we know what's best for you, so we're going to do what we think you should have. Nutrition is a right in this country, and...
Well, it's actually not, you know, you could argue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness includes...
Health?
I can argue health care, but nutrition, I think, would be a bit of a stretch.
Well, you know, I think a lot of countries are not used to paying. I mean, the United States per capita, I understand, does not pay as much as most countries do for food. And that's terribly unfortunate. But we have to do something to raise the quality of nutrition. And And to do that is to offer choice. How can he possibly say what they want is what they'll get if we only offer one choice?
Yeah, and that's the situation in many poor countries, many poor communities. This is what I tell you about the, you know, when my son and his class went out and looked at the food options available in the poorer neighborhoods in Atlanta, there just were no options.
It doesn't even apply to poor neighborhoods in Atlanta. You can go to any poor neighborhood in the United States and go into a convenience store, and what do they have? One banana.
Yeah.
And that's old.
Yeah.
So it's all around this country, and in order, it's all part of, I think, what Senator Obama is trying to get us to do is realize our own potentials,
mm-hmm.
and that we drive what we believe. So.
Yeah. We are the ones that we have been waiting for to Kathy, thank you for the call to use the phrase. But again, as I pointed out, I mean, this is being used in a very, very cynical fashion to say Obama is the Antichrist.
It should be known that in 2008 the world will be blessed. They will call him the One.
A nation healed, a world repaired. We are the ones we've been waiting for.
And he has anointed himself, ready to carry the burden of the world.
Yeah, carry the burden. I mean, this is what Jesus did, you know, and he's anointed himself. John the Baptist anointed. This is so explicitly religious to the hard religious right. I'm telling you, this is an, and it's absolutely running under the radar of the mainstream media, the corporate media, because you get folks like, you know, smart guys like David Gergen who think it's all about race. Who says
one? That's code for he's uppity. He ought to stay in his place. You know, everybody gets that who's from a southern background. We all understand that. When McCain comes out and starts talking about affirmative action, I'm against quotas. We get what that's about.
Yeah. See, so there actually is a racist component to this race, and I've been saying this for months now. That when you hear Pat Buchanan talk about exotic, and when you hear right wingers talk about, well, you know, he's arrogant or he's looking down his nose, those are all, as David Gergen said, and as I've been using that word uppity now on this program for months, and saying that's code for that. But this has gone beyond that. This Moses ad, this Ten Commandments ad, this piece by, you know, that Hannity is running, all of this stuff is all about he's the Antichrist.
The appointed year, the child ventured forth for the first time to bring the light unto all the world.
Yeah, that from the Hannity show. I mean, it's a pure religious play. 45 minutes past the hour. Back with your calls right after this. Tom Hartman with you, TomHartman.com. We're going to give away a copy of We the People to the best solution to this problem.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman program at HartmanRadio.com.
I'm dreaming of democracy in America once again. I'm dreaming of a country where we're all, you know, we are our brother's keeper. We're all in it together. I'm dreaming, you know, there's a book out last year called The European Dream. And it's like, it's not the American dream anymore. Everybody wants the European dream. They want to have national health care. They want to have a 40-hour work week. I mean, France used to, up until last week, have a 35-hour work week. They want to know that if they get fired, if the company decides to leave the country, that they can get free education all the way up to a PhD, and that they can get unemployment insurance. I mean, you know, just let's take care of ourselves. This is investment in human capital. And by the way, let's keep ourselves healthy. at the same time. You're Eric in Miami, Florida. Hey, Eric, what's on your mind?
How you doing, Tom?
Just great.
Thanks for taking my call. I don't know if you're able to see this or not, but I was looking at MSNBC, and Republicans have pulled a stunt, walking in front of the cameras, calling members of Congress back to the Capitol to demand a vote on drilling.
I know. In fact, I almost did that as my first hour instead of this Messiah thing, because it makes me so sad that Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi are so completely, totally incompetent when it comes to political theater. These people wouldn't know political theater if it came up and bit them on the butt. They are absolutely incompetent when it comes to this. And the Republicans have been doing this brilliantly ever since Newt Gingrich with his contract on America. Check items off. Go through the list. Let's do political theater. Let's do the nuclear option. You know, let's have the gang of 12. I mean, you know, the Republicans absolutely have this.
It's a shame. It's really a shame.
It really is. Eric, thank you. Thanks a lot for the call and for mentioning that and giving me a chance to rant on it. Linda in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Linda.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Just great, but I'll get better. What's on your mind?
Idea for you. One way to combat this Antichrist thing might be to engage Oprah in this conversation.
Except that she's into kind of New Age stuff, and that might even make the religious right even crazier.
Well, maybe so, but
she does speak to Middle America.
True, but she is she's very Christian oriented, and it might be just the place where at least there'd be some conversation about it without him necessarily there, but with her leading some conversation.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. Thank you, Linda, for sharing that. Mike in Palm Beach, Florida. Hey, Mike. Mike, you're on the air. Mike's not there. Let's go to David in Chicago. Hey, David, what's on your mind today?
Hello?
David, you are on the air.
Oh, hello. Yeah, my thing is, yesterday morning on Meet the Press, Kerry called Lieberman on the ad with Brittany and Paris, and Lieberman said, well, you know, we just wanted to show some celebrities. Well, you know, couldn't they show Anthony Hopkins, Robert De Niro? You know, I mean, that was just such a lame, you know.
Well, they weren't trying to show celebrity. What they were trying to show was vacuous celebrity. Celebrity with no content.
Okay.
That was the subtext. The subtext of that ad was not that Barack Obama is a celebrity. Because, you know, you want to talk about a celebrity? John McCain is a rock star. I mean, John McCain he's had walk-ins in movies and television. He's been on the covers of magazines. I mean, John McCain is an absolute celebrity. And here's a guy with, you know, what, 8 houses and $200 million and you know, wearing $450 Ferragamo shoes, and he's trying to play like he's the average guy, and Barack Obama just finished paying off his student loans? No, it wasn't about celebrity. It was about Paris Hilton and Britney Spears being celebrity with no meaning, celebrity with no content. That's what they were doing. Adrian in Clifton, New Jersey. Hey, Adrian. You're on the air, Adrian.
Okay.
What's up?
Oh, how you doing, Tom? I'm just calling in. Love the show. Last Thursday you made a point about how the John McCain, he has those 3 advertisements that's just been getting a lot of advertisement in the mainstream media, a lot of free press. It's called The One, Celeb, and Troops. I'm looking on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I know Barack Obama, he came out 4 days ago with that low road TV ad in response to that. Now, I'm looking on the views. He has about 305,000 views of that response to the 3 ads. And McCain's ads has 1.5 million for celeb. The one has about 800,000 views.
Yeah.
Troops has.
Now, you're absolutely right, Adrian. And part of the strategy of this thing, and this is what the Swift Boat guys did, is they spent less than $1 million and got probably $25 million worth of free publicity. And that's what the McCain campaign has been doing, and that's what the Obama campaign has been unable to do, even as they roll out the parallel ads. The one perhaps shining, you know, the silver lining in this cloud might be that some people are going to see these McCain ads, these The One ads, and say, you know, maybe he is the one. Maybe he is the guy who is going, because there was a sense about that, about John Kennedy, that this is the guy who can save America. After America had been, you know, there was a lot of concern when Kennedy was elected. You know, Cuba had just flipped communist. Richard Nixon with his, 5 o'clock stubble. There was concern that America might, and of course the Cold War. We needed somebody to prevent us from the Cold War, to prevent us from having a nuclear war. And there was all this hope around John Kennedy. I think maybe we can do the same. It may be that these ads will backfire. We'll see. Evelyn in Banner Elk, North Carolina. Evelyn, we have just a little less than a minute before we have to wrap up okay. this hour. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Is this Tom?
It is.
Hi.
And you're on the air.
Okay. I don't understand why the evangelicals are not offended or insulted by the one ad. In the Bible, God used man to get his message out. But this is a case, this ad is a case of man corrupting the belief in the Bible to advance man's agenda.
That's why, well said, Evelyn, and that's why I think it's so important that we call this stuff out. Because, as I said, the corporate media, you know, like David Gergen, he doesn't get it. He thinks this is just all about race.
The natives of the South, I can tell you, when you see the Charlton Heston ad, the one, that's code for he's uppity.
See, and no, it's not, actually. That when they say he's arrogant, that's code for he's uppity. But the one ad is, that's code for he's the Antichrist. Get it. Talk about it. Diffuse it by openly discussing it. 57 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone here in the People's Republic of Little Beirut, also known as Portland, Oregon. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, my. I was in Madison, Wisconsin over the weekend, spoke at the Nonstop Radio Conference. It was great. Aldous, thank you very much. Tip of the hat to you and to many of my friends, other talk show hosts that I had a great opportunity to hang out with, John Elliott, Peter B. Collins, Richard Green. Lee Rayburn was there, does a local show on the mic, and one, in my opinion, one of the very best local talk show hosts in the country. Certainly, you know, could just as easily be national talent. Had a great time. And it was also wonderful to be back in the Midwest. I grew up in Lansing, Michigan. I grew up in the Midwest, spent most of my life there. Most all of my family, my side of the family is still there. And get back there, you know, several times a year and have throughout my life. So it was just great. I wanted to thank everybody in Madison. Mitt Romney on CNN lying about John McCain. This certifies in my mind or cements in my mind that Mitt Romney is going to be the vice presidential nominee and that there's a reasonable chance that before the convention or certainly before the election that John McCain is going to have a health problem since he's getting a little flaky these days. Going to have a health problem. The Republicans are going to replace him with Romney. Romney will be the presidential nominee. And then the question is who's going to be the vice presidential nominee. But here's the bottom line. McCain has put forward a tax cut plan for big corporations. In 2007, ExxonMobil paid $4.3 billion in tax, a little over $4 billion in taxes. Under this plan, ExxonMobil, just this one company, under McCain's plan, would only pay about $1.2 billion. In other words, a little over $1 billion in taxes, from $4 billion down to $1 billion. Chevron pays $1.7 billion in 2007. Under the McCain plan, they'd only pay $480 million in tax, less than $1 billion, less than $500 million. So you go from a little over $1.5 billion to less than $500 million. ConocoPhillips, $4.3 billion in taxes, goes to $1.2 billion in taxes under the McCain plan. I mean, what we're talking about here is a shift in taxes, a cut in taxes for the big oil companies from a total, if you add in Marathon, $1.3 billion that they actually paid in 2007 under the McCain plan, they'd only pay $370 million, et cetera. Valero Energy, $1.9 billion to $550 million. You add it all up, and they go from paying over $13 billion in taxes today to just a little under $4 billion in taxes under the McCain plan. In other words, the oil companies get a $9 billion tax savings under the McCain plan. So Mitt Romney was confronted with this from a Barack Obama ad on CNN. Here it is.
Yeah, we have it now.
Every time you fill your tank, the oil companies fill their pockets. Now Big Oil's filling John McCain's campaign with $2 million in contributions. Because instead of taxing their windfall profits to help drivers, McCain wants to give them another $4 billion in tax breaks. After one president in the pocket of Big Oil, we can't afford another.
Well, here's where it's factually inaccurate. It's not $4 billion that McCain wants to give them. It's $9 billion. But nonetheless, she says, what do you think about this? Barack Obama says $4
billion. Your response?
Well, that's really sad. I didn't know that Barack Obama had stooped to dishonesty.
Yeah, yeah. And then he goes on to just basically lie about this thing. Which proves to me that Mitt Romney is going to be the vice presidential nominee. Although, you know, lying and Republicans kind of goes together. Here's another amazing story. You can find this over at the top of thinkprogress.org, by the way. Last week, Bruce Ivins, you know, the guy who committed suicide? And I want to riff on this for a minute as well. Bruce Ivins committed suicide, and there are some very serious doubts about whether this guy was the anthrax killer, number one. But number two, what has now come out, and this is absolutely fascinating, what has now come out is that according to a former FBI official, this is published in today's New York Daily News. According to a former FBI official, FBI Director Robert Mueller actually got beat up verbally during the president's morning intelligence briefings. Well, here's the quote. After the October 5th, 2001 death from anthrax exposure, Sun photo editor Robert Stevens, Mueller was, quote, beaten up, end quote, during President Bush's morning intelligence briefings for not producing proof the killer spores were the handiwork of terrorist mastermind Osama bin Laden. They really wanted to blame somebody in the Middle East, the retired senior FBI official told the New York Daily News. On October 15th, George Bush said to the media, there may be some possible link to bin Laden. I wouldn't put it past him. Vice President Cheney also said to the press, bin Laden's henchmen are trained how to deploy and use these kinds of substances, so you start to piece it all together. John McCain said, and I'm quoting, some of this anthrax may have come from Iraq, suggesting that this was the second phase of the war on terror, and it may be in Iraq. Now, all the experts said this is nonsense, but this is how it was being pitched by Bush, Cheney, and McCain. And as you know, the only two guys in the United States Senate who could have stopped the Patriot Act, which was moving through Congress in October at that time, the only two guys who could have stopped it, Pat Leahy, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee, out of which it had to pass, and Tom Daschle, the Senate Majority Leader who has the authority, the right, the power to bring it to a vote or to prevent it from being brought to a vote, were the only two members of Congress who got the anthrax in the mail. And now here, I found this post over at Democratic Underground downright chilling. This is posted by a guy who says that he is a former spook. And you know, my caveat is that I don't know, but it's a fascinating post. His neighbors say that he knew that he was under surveillance because they parked the surveillance vehicles in front of their houses on numerous occasions. This was a classic suicide op, in which the subject is surveilled overtly. He is harassed until it drives him crazy. He is threatened with jail and prosecution like the sword of Damocles was hanging over his head. He is reminded that if he goes to jail and or is executed, that his family will not receive any of his pension, his insurance, his retirement. Agents had reached his therapist and were getting the evidence to discredit his name and any defense he might wage against the charges he was being threatened with. He was also being prepped for discreditation in the event that he turned whistleblower. His suicide was an excellent operation by those who were either responsible for the original anthrax or who wanted to make the story go away by putting the blame on him. And then this former spy, at least he asserts he is, posting over at democraticunderground.com, says, questions. If Bruce Ivins was the main suspect, why haven't we heard anything about the anthrax case in nearly 7 years? Why was Stephen Hatfield able to successfully sue the U.S. government for harassment and violation of his civil liberties just a couple of months ago? Did the government lean on Ivins the same way they leaned on Hatfield, but Hatfield was able to get out from under the pressure by putting the pressure back on the government? He says, for what it's worth, I used to work in the discrediting field many years ago, and I've seen this done a few times, and this appears to have followed the SOP, standard operating procedure. No autopsy. Well, I guess the case is closed and ready to be sent down the memory hole. Meanwhile, the Washington Post yesterday, the Sunday Washington Post, this article by Joby Warwick, Thompson, and Davis, the subhead, well, the headline, scientists question FBI probe on anthrax subhead, Ivans could not have been attacker, some say. Colleagues and friends of the vaccine specialist remain convinced that Ivans was innocent. They contend he had neither the motive nor the means to create the fine lethal powder that was sent by mail to news outlets and congressional offices. Nobody, by the way, ever points out that it was Leahy and Daschle, the two guys who could have stopped the Patriot Act, who got the anthrax. You will never find that in the corporate media. I mean, the fact is there, but they never, this sounds too much like conspiracy theory. Anyhow, back to the Washington Post article. Mindful of previous FBI mistakes in fingering others in the case, many are deeply skeptical that the Bureau has gotten it right this time. And then they quote Jeffrey Adamovitz, former director of the Bacteriological Division of the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute for Infectious Diseases, U.S. AMRID. He says a lot of the tactics they used were designed to isolate him from his support. The FBI just continued to push his buttons. I really don't think he's the guy. I said, this is the former director of the bacteria. This is the guy. This is the former director of the thing. He says, I said to the FBI, show me your evidence. I really don't think he's the guy. Others, including former colleagues, I'm quoting from the Washington Post, and scientists with backgrounds in bacteria in biological weapons defense disagreed that Ivans could have created the anthrax powder even if he was motivated to. U.S. AMRID didn't deal with powdered anthrax, says Richard O. Spritzel, a former biodefense scientist who worked with Ivans at the Army Lab. And then they go on to point out that he couldn't have made any money on this. The allegation is he wanted to make some money on this by getting a vaccine out there. The fact of the matter is the vaccine, the patent to the vaccine and everything would have been owned by the government. The government limits profits from patents that are government produced to $15,000. I'm sorry, this guy's not going to kill people, five people, to make his small share of $15,000 for his lab.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
And let me just add, 21 minutes past the hour, by the way, welcome back. Let me just add that we all know, we've known for 7,000 years, that the way that you stimulate an economy is by putting money into the hands of people who buy things, and the most appropriate way to put that money in their hands is to give them a job. Even if you have to create the job out of thin air, as Franklin Roosevelt did during the Republican Great Depression, and had people building dams and bridges and buildings and whatnot, even if you have to create that, planting forests, even if you have to create that job, give them the dignity of a job, give them a job, give them a paycheck, and they will use that money to buy things. When they buy things, that will create demand in the marketplace, which will cause companies to hire more people to make more things to supply the demand. Real simple. Raise their wages. Every time the minimum wage goes up, what happens? Economic activity goes up. The single exception was during the oil crisis in the 70s, when the oil crisis wiped out the benefit of the minimum wage. But the fact of the matter is that whenever you have unions, you have better economic activity. Whenever you have states like here in Oregon where you have a minimum wage that's a couple dollars higher than the national minimum wage, economic activity goes up. Whenever the minimum wage goes up, economic activity goes up. But the Republicans say, no. The way you stimulate the economy, give money to rich people. They'll put it in banks in Switzerland. They'll buy factories in China. And somehow some of that is going to trickle down on all the rest of us. and then we all become peons, right? How to create a nation of peons, trickle-down economics. And it's continuing. 30 years of Reaganomics, planned layoffs at U.S. companies jumped 26% in 1 month from June to July. In July, planned layoffs totaled 103,000 compared with 81,755 in June. Most of these are people who don't even know that they're going to get the axe. From January to July, planned layoffs totaled 579,260 people, up 33% from the same period a year ago. That's over a half a million people that business in America is planning on destroying the lives of. This isn't just a statistic. This is 579,260 people who are going to be out of work, who aren't going to be able to pay their mortgage, who aren't going to be able to buy things, who aren't going to be able to stimulate the economy with their money, or who are going to have to dip into whatever equity they may have left in their home, assuming that they have any at all and most don't, or into their credit cards in order to simply survive. This is Reaganomics. This is what Reaganomics has bought us. And what do we get about this? We get Mitt Romney on TV lying about the fact that John McCain wants to transfer $9.5 billion. $9.5 billion to the big oil companies. I mean, this is just absolutely nuts. Anna Berger is with us. She's the International Secretary and Treasurer of SEIU, and our labor segment. She's also the chairman of Change to Win, the International Secretary Treasurer of SEIU. SEIU.org is the website. Hey, Anna, welcome to the show.
It's great to be with you. How are you doing?
I am very well, thank you. Tell us what SEIU is up to right now.
Well, we are determined to mobilize our members, engage our members in this political season. We think that we have an incredible opportunity to change the direction of our country as long as we engage our members and other voters around the critical issues that are out there for them.
What are your thoughts on this meeting that apparently Walmart held last week, where they basically threatened people that if they voted in a non-specified but fairly obvious way, that unions would come in and it would be the end of Walmart, end of your job?
Well, you know, I mean, Walmart has kind of built its practice around weakening workers' rights. So they do have a pretty outrageous record on violating the Family Medical Leave Act, firing employees who have protected medical leave. They have had lots of charges against them about violating child labor laws and immigration laws as well. So this is a company that seems to have a history of exploiting workers. So it doesn't surprise me that they're trying to prevent workers from having their voice heard on the job by encouraging them to support candidates who don't support their rights. I just don't think they're going to get very far.
Well, we'll see. The thing that concerns me, Anna, in the minute we have left here, is that we're here in Oregon, and I've seen them traveling around the country locally. These are all local ad buys on cable TV, but they're carpet bombing the country. These ads where they show the kind of, you know, mafia New Jersey guy saying, you're gonna sign that card, right, kid? You know, these anti-card check ads.
No, they're terrible ads. They're trying to, you know, and these are the same companies who they know, you know, intimidate workers. 91% of workers who try to form a union are forced to attend one-on-one anti-union employee meetings with their supervisors. So they know exactly what it is like to intimidate workers. They do it every single day. Nearly half of employers threaten to close their work sites when workers want to have a union. Three-quarters of them hire outside guns to come in and try to intimidate and threaten workers to keep them from organizing a union. You know, I think the reality is Walmart knows that if workers were left to their own power to have a voice in the job, they would vote for a union tomorrow.
Yeah.
Now, we've done polls. 96% of workers say that they would have a union tomorrow if they could have one without being threatened and intimidated.
Yeah. There's some huge money coming from the National Association of Manufacturers, and many of these other trade groups, as well as the huge fortunes from Walmart working against this. Anna Berger, SEIU.org is the website. Change to Win. Thanks, Anna. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Call him now at
866-303-2270.
by their dark parts.
Welcome back to the Real Free Speech Zone, the Tom Hartman Program, 866-303-2270. TomHartman.com. We will shortly be announcing our winner in our Who Has the Best Suggestion about how Barack Obama can push back against the Antichrist suggestions in John McCain's new political advertising. And still taking your calls on that. And the other many topics we've touched upon today. Steve in Grand Rapids, listening to WTKG. Hey, Steve.
Hi. I actually have a suggestion for that very issue.
Okay.
They keep saying he's the Antichrist. Well, we need to fight fire with fire. If they're trying to claim that through the Bible that he's the Antichrist, we need to prove, using the same book, that it's not the case. And so,
but see, trying to prove a negative is awful hard. Why not try to prove that John McCain is?
Well, it's easier because it says
he's the
in
beast.
The Bible, he will come when no one thinks he will come, which makes it simple. Because that means that if these people think he is coming, then because that satisfies that basically breaks the one condition that they put in there.
Right. And back so, in, I think it's in Luke, it might even be in Matthew, that Jesus said, you know.
Basically.
Yeah, it was either Matthew or Luke. Thank you, Steve. Jesus said, you know, it's not going to come with warnings and things. You know, the people won't say lo here and or lo there, et cetera, et cetera. But actually, that's the return of Christ that he's talking about, not the Antichrist. But the interesting thing, I remember, you know, when Reagan became president. And there were a lot of people on the right, a lot of conservative Christians who were flipped out because Reagan's address in California used to be 666, whatever the street was. And he actually got the local government to change his street address because it was 666. And there were six letters in Ronald, six letters in Wilson, and six letters in Reagan. His name was 666. And, you know, in the end, there's the whore and the beast. And the beast is, you know, the name of the beast was 666. And then there was this horn, and there was Gorbachev with this horn on his forehead, and there was just all this weird stuff going on during the Reagan administration among people who were into this stuff. And I'm telling you, it's coming back, and it's going to come back big time. Matt in Portland. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I had a suggestion on the whole messianic antichrist thing too.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that we on the left, and especially Barack Obama's campaign, are better at using the internet than the Republicans are. And so let's fight fire with fire like the previous caller suggested and have Barack Obama and his speechwriting team sit down and create two short Tom TV videos, just like you do. YouTube. And target them kind of like fireside chats to both these audiences, the left behind crowd and the racists.
Mm-hmm.
And redirect the issue to, instead of him being the Messiah, love of country, and instead of racist saying, well, I understand you might not vote for me, but these are the issues that will help you that I'm trying to get forward.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what they're doing, Matt, and thank you for the point. And they're doing a pretty good job of it, but the problem is that no candidate has ever won on the issues. Or very few candidates. Arguably Andrew Jackson won about, you know, because people didn't like the second bank or the first bank of the United States. But even then, I'd say he won because he was viewed as old hickory stick. He was viewed as the tough guy who's going to run the country through tough times because we were experiencing a recession then or a depression. I don't think that you can make a careful and cogent and accurate argument that any candidate has ever won. Even largely on the issues. Candidates win mostly on the perception of them as people. We hire, you know, our presidents anyway. Members of Congress, issues. Presidents, personality. And it's because the head of state and head of government are combined in one job, that being the president of the United States. And so people feel like they're voting for the king. And, you know, everybody wants a king who will represent them well. I think Obama's strongest thing that he can do is continue acting presidential and ignore it when they call him arrogant or point out that arrogant, that was John Kennedy arrogant? I mean, everybody, they call it Camelot, for goodness sakes. And, you know, which is the old kingdom, you know, it's King Arthur. I mean, they literally referred to the Kennedy administration as Camelot. People loved that. They didn't call him arrogant. Arrogant, when used in the context of Barack Obama, as David Gergen correctly pointed out, is code for uppity. Let's point it out. Sal in Los Angeles. Hey, Sal, what's up?
Hey, Tom. A long-time listener. Love the show.
Thank you.
I think he really needs to direct this issue directly and and volley it back. And directly ask John McCain, do you think I'm the Antichrist? And then also ask the media, who you know isn't going to really be very active in this other than discussing it, ask the media to ask McCain, do you really believe that Barack Obama is the Antichrist?
Yeah, but this is the problem that John Kerry faced with the Swift Boat vets, and his fear was that if he discussed the issue that it would multiply it tenfold, and he hoped that it would just go under the radar. He didn't realize that the corporate media was going to multiply it tenfold anyway. I think that that's happening here with this as well. But it's got to be more than just addressing it head on. Although I agree with you, highlighting the issue, bringing it out in the open is an important first step. It's one of the reasons why I'm doing it right now. And, it has to be done. It has to be done. Dan in San Diego. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Tom. I had an idea about the ad. And, by the way, the country where they were privatizing the rainwater that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
I think it was Bolivia.
Bolivia, you're right. It was Bolivia. Yeah.
But anyway, I wrote
a chapter about that actually in my book Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, but it's been a decade since I wrote it. So anyway.
Yeah. In the ad, the McCain ad, they portrayed. They mentioned something about Moses, and what Obama should do is say something like, you know, well, I'm not Moses, but I will try to save the people from the evil Pharaoh. Leave it blank, you know, who that evil Pharaoh is.
Weak. Oh, that's a great one. See, that's turning it around and shoving it back in their face rather than trying to deny it or rather than trying to. Yeah, that's brilliant.
And I have a last question. You mentioned about the taxes being lowered on the oil companies. And I was just wondering, is there a resource where we can find how much the corporations pay in taxes and how much of the commons they use? Does anybody estimate that?
I have seen those figures. The Oregon Public Research Group has done some great work on that. I would check PIRG, the Public Interest Research Group of the United States, and I think it's PIRG.org, PIRG.org, but it might be Google it. And they have good information. And then citizen.org, Ralph Nader's public citizen site, has very good information on this. I would guess that it shouldn't be that hard to track down, Dan. Dan, I got to move along. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Let's see here. Mark in Seattle. Hey, Mark.
Hey, I have got a suggestion. You are right that Democrats don't win on the issues. The public wants them, but they don't win on them. Okay. And I think with the Obama campaign, you know, McCain is running George Bush's third campaign. He's not only running for George Bush's third term, he's running his third campaign.
Yep.
And I don't know why he would govern any differently, why his policies wouldn't be any different. I don't know why Obama doesn't just slice and dice some of those Britain commercials, show that this is McCain running for George Bush's third campaign. We all have, you know, 75% of the country has strong feelings against George Bush. You need to get to that visceral level and make those associations.
Yeah. And I think that they are in some of their ads, and some of their ads are, you know, are very good and do that. But they need to go, you know, a whole step farther, you know, beyond that, in my humble opinion. I mean, they're starting, but they need to go beyond
that. If they were doing it more effectively, we wouldn't even be having this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, here's, Barack Obama campaign ad.
The seriousness of the issues, given the fact that the decisions that we make right now are going to help determine the future, not just of the next generation, but perhaps generations after that. Given the magnitude of our challenges when it comes to energy and health care and jobs and our foreign policy, you'd think that we'd be having a serious debate. But so far, we've been hearing about is Paris Hilton and Britney Spears.
Yeah, this is over at Obama. BarackObama.com. You can check it out. He's got the whole response there. Dana in Belfair, Washington. Hey, Dana. Or Lena, I'm sorry. We have a minute before the break.
No problem. I was thinking that
before Barack Obama had mentioned in one of his speeches extremism, and if this is not a case of theocratic extremism, I'm not sure what to call it. If we're standing in judgment of theocracies on the other side of the world, then we should do some self-examining.
Yeah.
If this is
paint them as extremists, in other words. Yeah, and the problem is that some of them, you know, I mean, Barry Goldwater campaigned on, you know, extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And there are some people who will actually embrace that word. But I think your point is well taken, that we need to highlight this, you know.
But here's the problem. And I'm not interested in getting into a tit for tat. These negative ads, these negative attacks, spending all this time talking about me and instead of talking about what he's going to do, that's not going to lower your gas prices. That's not going to help you stay in your home if you're falling behind on the mortgage.
I mean, that's the bottom line. 45 minutes past the hour.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman program at hartmanradio.com.
Couple of winners here. We were going to give away one copy of one of the favorites of my books that I've written, We the People. It's actually I don't want to call it a comic book. It's an illustrated nonfiction book about the history of America. It's just absolutely good. And we're giving away two copies, actually, because we've got two people who posted blogs over at TomHartman.com, posted on this topic. What should Barack Obama do? How should he respond to these ads that are implying that he's the Antichrist? And first, Nora gets a book, because she says, expose the vehicle. The stupid details change. Forget about the details. It's the mudslinging vehicle that stays the same. Point out, say, don't let your personal faith, belief, creed, or religion be degraded for the purpose of political mudslinging. Brilliant, Nora. And then Ottoman also is going to get it. We're going to send Ottoman a book as well. He says, there's no way Barack Obama can be the Antichrist because George Walker Bush is the Antichrist. We've had 7 years of death and destruction. I mean, it's pretty obvious. So good on you. Congratulations to both of you. And I'm winning a copy of We the People, How to Take Back America, and for making great contributions to our message board. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, on the line with us from Washington, D.C., with our daily update about all things happening in the world. Hey, Ellen.
How are you? The Republicans are back on the floor of the House today. And you know what's fascinating about them is that they, as you and I talked about the other day, really understand technology. Because the
CFP, and political theater.
Yes, well, they political theater and technology, and combined, they're very, very successful. Essentially, what they did today is they got on the floor, and John Culbertson, a congressman, used his N95 camera to broadcast it live. They put it up on Quick.com, and essentially, they also used Twitter. So they used the new technologies, they bypassed C-SPAN, and they got their message out.
Amazing. Amazing. And that's the thing. I mean, Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi, there have been so many opportunities to use political theater.
It's interesting because Pelosi put out the GOP energy plan. Now, you know, you and I disagree about Pelosi. I actually think she's reasonably effective. But her plan...
I think legislatively she's very effective, but I think in terms of political theater, she's incompetent.
Well, yes. And what she did is they put out a typical thing you would expect from the mid-90s, the GOP energy plan, none of the above, new directions, Congress offering solutions. And then she says no to renewable energy, no to reducing transit fare, no, 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 no. Well, okay, Nancy, that's fine. Get up there and do something with it.
My point. my point. I mean, her, you know, her first 100 days, legislatively brilliant. She's done some really good stuff as a kind of wonky, I don't mean that in a negative way. You know, I mean, she understands the details. She takes them on. She's got, you know, there are a few priorities I wish she'd had, like impeachment and ending the war. But nonetheless, you know, she did a lot of good stuff. Problem is, nobody knows it. You know, Newt Gingrich came out with his contract on America, his checklist, and every time he got something passed, he'd call a press conference. He'd have a giant, you know, contract that looked like the Bill of Rights. He'd check something off with a giant felt marker. I mean, these guys understand political theater. And Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi need to sit in a room with
somebody. I'd have a neon nomade and put it on in the floor of the House.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, every time, or in the Senate, every time the Republicans filibuster something, let's have a siren go off, or let's have a giant moo, you know, or a bad elephant, you know. I mean, there are so many things that could be done to catch the attention of the American people, and the attention span's only a few seconds long. It need not be anything long, just like the Republicans are doing right now. I mean, the Republicans are just beating the pants off the Democrats on this topic, and they're absolutely useless when it comes to the actual details of it. Pardon my rant.
I love your rant. Okay,
thank
a couple
you.
Other things today. Believe it or not, it does look like the stimulus checks had some effect. Consumer spending and income did go over the expectations in June. Factory orders did go up in June. So that happened. In terms of the candidates today, Senator McCain is going to be in South Carolina at a bikers rally this evening, and the Vote Vets and other groups are planning on being there to protest his views. And today, I'm sure you've been talking about it, Senator Obama did release his energy plan, or at least part one of it, and he actually took McCain on pretty directly, and he said that he's done little to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. He said he also blamed voting against a variety of conservation efforts that he did, and he said over three decades he hasn't done much. His big goal now, Senator Obama, is no Mideast oil in 10 years.
Yeah, that's marvelous, and he needs to have some kind of a prop to go with it. You know, like, you know, a shake being knocked over or something. I don't know. You know, some sort of a prop that, you know, no more foreign oil. You know, it's, you know, toss the guy back over the ocean or something. I don't
know. Well, actually, Jim and I did an argument about it, and we had a cartoonist deal with it. It's actually up on YouTube. I think you can put it in long and short and find our thing. And we have lots of cartoons that are very fun. And the object is eventually when we do it on Fox, is to get a younger audience.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what you want, because older people are used to talking heads. Young people think it's the most boring thing they've ever seen.
Right. It needs to be handled in a Jon Stewart way, in a Stephen Colbert way.
Right.
And politicians of the generation of Pelosi and Reid just don't get it. And you got a lot of young Republicans in there, and they're eating their lunch, in my opinion. Ellen Radner, Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thanks, Ellen.
Have a good one.
Thanks. Tomorrow, Dan Gaynor, Vice President of the Business and Media Institute. We're going to be talking about global warming and minorities. Who gets hurt worse by global warming? Plus, I'll debate Michael Tanner, Senior Fellow of the Cato Institute, about health care, universal versus free market. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Everything begins when we get active. Get out there, get active. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.